on today's episode of May the Record Reflect.
I think the biggest, and by the biggest, I mean by in the 80 or 90%, when you have a problem with the witness, it's because you didn't prepare enough. I'll tell you from my own failures when I was a lawyer, when I lost cases, I could almost always tell you, God, if the witnesses had just said what they were supposed to, I would have won. And so it's easy to blame them, but that underprepared witness is really our fault. It takes time. For lawyers, time is your most precious commodity. So it takes time, and we don't have a lot of time. But if you skip over the preparation or give short shrift to the preparation, then it's going to come out at the end. The witness is going to say things, not because they're a bad witness, but because they're underprepared. That's the biggest flaw or pitfall I see with witness prep.
That was Judge Christopher Whitten, and this is May the Record Reflect. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Summertime and another episode of the monthly podcast of the National Institute for Trial Advocacy. I am your host, Marcy Mangan, and you know what? I'm just going to say it. It was such a treat to record this episode because my guest is not only a Superior Court judge, but he's also a longtime listener of the podcast. Judge Christopher Whitten began his legal career as a clerk in the Arizona Court of Appeals before serving as a deputy county attorney for the Maricopa County Attorney's Office. He spent a decade in private practice, then in 2006 was appointed to the Maricopa County Superior Court. At the moment, however, Judge Whitten is in the hot seat. He's going to be answering questions about the ins and outs of witness preparation. And boy, howdy, did he take his own advice. Here's our interview. When we were preparing for our interview a couple of weeks ago, you shared with me your opinion that the best witness is a confident witness. What do you think makes for a confident witness?
Well, I think there are a number of things, some of them within our control, some of them without. Some people just are good witnesses. Sometimes we're blessed with having good witnesses. But even with good witnesses, I think there are two aspects that can make them better, or two aspects with respect to witnesses who are less competent that can make them at least appear to be more confident in their either deposition testimony or their trial testimony. I think they have to be procedurally comfortable. They have to know procedurally what's going on. And we as lawyers have so many procedural things that we know about and we live with daily that are foreign, completely foreign to normal people. And then substantively, they have to be prepared. If they're prepared and they are comfortable with the procedures, they're going to be a better, more competent witness.
Before we get into breaking those two components down, I want to ask you a quick question right off the bat, and that is whether witness preparation is considered privileged. Can you talk about that first?
Yeah, Marcy, it generally, the answer is almost always yes. There are certain situations, and they're important, where you have to be aware of that you might be within the exception to that rule. So there's a case called Upjohn, United States versus Upjohn, which was a Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court case that comes up a lot when you're dealing with employees of your corporate client and preparing them, or even former employees of your corporate client. There may be arguments that those witness preparation sessions are not privileged. We probably don't have time or couldn't stand the boringness of going through Upjohn all at once over the next hour. And I wouldn't want to do it because I'm not expert on it. But I would just say the general answer is yes. Witness prep is privileged. It's attorney-client privileged if it's your client, and it's work. It's protected by the work product privilege if it's not your client generally.
Okay, great. That's good to know. So let's break down the two components you mentioned. The first one is procedural comfort, which you said is being at ease with the process of being deposed. What are the essential components to creating procedural comfort in your witness?
Well, remember, I bet that most of the people who are listening to this podcast are lawyers. That seems to be the audience that would listen to something like this. I can't imagine any sane layperson wanting to do it. But we as lawyers kind of live in our own world where depositions happen. You know, back in the day, it was, you know, we do three of them a week. And so they're so familiar to us that we forget that they're not that way for everybody. So I think the first part of dealing with a witness's procedural comfort is to just listen to them. And it seems weird, but it's sometimes very hard skill for lawyers to not stop talking and listen for a minute. They'll tell you what they're anxious about if you let them, and if you make them feel like it's safe for them to tell you what anxieties they have about the case, about being a witness, about a deposition, about trials. If you give them the opportunity to talk to you about their anxieties first, you're going to get a lot off of their mind and hopefully put them in a better frame of mind to take whatever advice you're going to give them in the witness prep session in a little bit more and live with it a little bit more. If that anxiety doesn't get dealt with, Marcy, it's going to be like, you know, talking to a wall. They're not going to really take in all the advice you're giving them. So I think the first part of it is let them express and encourage them to express whatever anxieties they've got. Get those on the table. Second, as you get into the more, this is the process of a deposition, don't lecture them. We tend to give you, here's five rules for your deposition and follow these five rules and here's the first one and blah, 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 blah. And it's just not a good way to learn. We don't learn that well that way. That's what NIDA kind of is all about, is lecturing is not a great way to learn. Learn it by doing it. So try to listen and have a conversation with somebody, with your witness, rather than a lecture about the five things they need to remember. So listen as much as you talk, at least as much as you talk. If you're looking at a transcript of it, it ought to be equal amounts, at least, witness and lawyer. And then a part of the thing is, you know, again, we do this all the time, but who's going to be there? Where is it going to be? What should I wear? Those little things make people afraid.
Yeah, that's right. I was thinking about all of the different things that go into walking into a deposition, even to the point where I think that if you're counsel, you probably would want to arrange to up your witness's comfort level by arranging to meet with them beforehand so that you walk into the law firm or wherever the depo is being held together so that they're not left all on their own and, you know, swirling in their anxiety.
Yeah, I like that suggestion a lot. And I would always try and do that. You know, having them wait for you in opposing counsel's lobby for a deposition or having them meet you in the hallway outside a courtroom for trial isn't best practices.
Yeah, walk in together.
Walk in together. Have them meet, even if it's at a Starbucks down the street, or preferably at your office and then drive over with them. But if that's impractical, then at least somewhere that's neutral so that they have some space where they can talk to you about any last minute things that are problematic. I think one of the things you see lawyers frequently being able to help with witnesses is getting them to slow down, the timing of their testimony. People get going when they're anxious and when they're nervous and they talk fast. And sometimes, and I'm as guilty of this as anyone, your mouth gets going a little quicker than your brain can keep up. And so you're not thinking very clearly about what your answers are or how you should word them. So I think after talking about the logistics, the who, what, where, when, what to wear, all those kinds of things, you're probably your very next thing ought to just be talking about how to slow down, how to take breaths, how to listen and have that echo memory of a question. So when somebody says a question, you kind of echo it back in your mind before you start answering it. Those are things that can make a big difference in either a deposition or a trial.
It seems like it would help ensure that you are actually, or that your witness is actually answering the question that was asked.
Right. A really good piece of advice. And it's easier to get someone to accept that advice if their cadence is slower. They're actually talking slower and they're giving that time after the question's asked to refresh it in their memory, to play it back, to make sure that they're asking, answering only the question. If you just tell them, don't answer anything other than the question, not super helpful. You've got to give them tools to do that. And going slow is a great tool for that.
So what else do we need to know about procedural comfort?
So I think one of the things that we have historically told potential witnesses before their depositions or before trial, when the other side's asking you questions, give the shortest true answer that you can give. And that's a good rule. It seems like that's the thing lawyers pick up on as rule number one to tell witnesses. Think about why we're doing it. We're doing it maybe too much because we're afraid of witnesses giving information to opposing counsel that'll get used against us. And that's a valid concern, and it's a real concern in depositions. You get witnesses who are who think that they're there to try and win the case for you, and that's a dangerous witness because they're going to say a lot of things, maybe be more than responsive to questions. And even with the best of intentions, they're going to say something that is inconsistent with something else they've said or something they might say in the future. So less is generally more. I think that rule is kind of getting challenged a little bit now, though. We have witnesses who are capable of giving more than the shortest true answer and helping our case. So I think part of the witness prep is trying to determine, is this a shortest true answer kind of witness, or is this a witness that we can let and give permission to expand on their answers a little bit?
And how do you know that?
So the last part of our witness prep, and we'll talk about this in a little bit, I think, is the role play, where we're actually role playing what a deposition might look like or what cross-examination might look like. And that's where you know it. I mean, that it becomes very obvious to you there if your witness can't handle it and you need to reinforce the shortest possible answer, or whether your witness is doing a good job in the role play and can give a little more expansive answers.
I know that one thing that can really rattle a witness, whether they're on the stand or being deposed, is when opposing counsel registers an objection. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Right. And it shouldn't. If you've prepared your witness for trial or for depositions, you're going to get objections in both. The ones who, you're right, it really rattles them, didn't know what to do or were never instructed or prepared what an objection meant. You know, in depositions especially, you'll see witnesses all the time when the first objection gets made, not knowing what to do, looking at their attorney and having to be told you can go ahead and answer. So the best place to have that happen for the first time isn't in the deposition. It's in the rehearsal. It's in the witness prep. So for in a deposition setting, if you're preparing a witness for a deposition, it has to include what, because you know there's going to be objections in a deposition. What do you do when that objection is registered? When I object, we want this to look smooth, like we know what we're doing. So I'm going to object. I'm going to say a few words after the objection. I want you to think about why I've objected, because it may help you in your answer. It may be that I objected because they're asking you to speculate about what someone else might have thought. And I don't think that the rules allow you to do that. So I've made an objection, but all I've said in most jurisdiction is objection, form, foundation. So I'm not coaching you and I'm not telling you how you should do it, but you should at least replay the question in your mind to see if there's a, if you could figure out what the problem I had with it is. But then answer. We're going to look like we know what we're doing here and you're going to answer. It's not going to be this moment of panic for you because we've practiced it. We've told you about what to do, and then we've practiced it when we do our role play to make sure you are comfortable with it.
Sounds like learning by doing to me.
It's exactly what it is, right?
So you said that the second quality in a confident witness is substantive preparation, that feeling of ease with what you know and are being asked to share as the witness. What are the essentials there?
Well, let me break it down into two parts. First, I think one of the things we do maybe too little, or at least in my end of it, because I'm not sitting in most depositions now, I'm reading them when they're being submitted as in motion, support of a motion, or I'm seeing the testimony in trial in the courtroom, is that people are surprised by being handed documents. And that's baffling to me. That seems like it ought to be something that in preparation, any document that that witness may be asked to look at and comment on ought to be shown to them in your witness prep too. So that it's not, again, not the first time they're seeing it or not the first time they're practicing how they're going to respond to it. So going over those key documents. And when I say key documents, I don't mean if you've got a complex commercial case that involves 1,000 documents, you've spent all of your time preparing your witness by going over all 1,000 documents. Right? That would be a waste of your time because most of them are not important or aren't going to be shown. So pick out the key documents and go over those in your witness prep. That substantively is going to be important. Practicing with the lawyer, with the witness on what should they do when they get a document handed to them, you know, as opposed to just starting to read from it or accepting what the lawyer says it is. Take your time, look at it, look at the whole thing, make sure you know what it is and you're familiar with it. Some witnesses will get really hinky about feeling like they got to go quick and they've got to respond to a question that's on the table. If you rehearse it with them and hand them a document in the role-playing part at the end of the deposition prep, then they know that they can take their time. So using documents in your rehearsal is really, really important, but don't overwhelm them with 1,000 of them.
Other suggestions?
Well, I think some people, there is some worry, especially if this isn't your actual client. So if you're talking about a fact witness where it may now be discoverable what you've done in witness prep, or even with your client, a witness, people worry about, look, if I show my client documents during our witness prep, then the other side's going to get to ask them about those documents and what did you look at. I think every deposition, every good deposition, the lawyer asks the witness about what they've looked at to help prepare for the deposition. Don't be afraid of that. The content of those documents or which documents they were is not discoverable generally. And when a witness gets asked, did you review any documents? The answer can just be, yes, I did, without disclosing which ones they were, because that is work product. Unless the witness didn't remember something in the witness prep and their memory was refreshed by looking at a document, then what that the content of that document may be discoverable. But unless that happened, the content of the documents you show to a witness are not really discoverable generally.
Okay. So those are good distinctions, right, to know. Great.
Well, one of the other things that people feel, again, a little bit queasy about is, do I share, do I tell you, Marcy, when I'm preparing you, do I tell you what Joe Blow said in this case? or am I afraid that's going to now be used in your deposition, that you're going to have to say that I told you what some other witness said, or that'll influence you in a way that isn't fair. And that's a really, that's a valid concern for people to have. There's ethical limitations to what you can do. You know, the old-fashioned word for it was woodshedding. When we take a witness out to the woodshed to prepare them and kind of feed them their testimony, which is A, unethical, and B, ineffective. But how much of their testimony when they say, you know, Marcy, you tell me in our witness prep, you know, I don't really remember what color the light was when that Buick went through. Can I challenge that? Can I say, well, look, here's something you said previously to the police officer, and here's what three other people standing on the corner said. And I'm not, and the answer is, I don't know. I mean, I'll give you an example, two cases in the same federal circuit, in the Fifth Circuit, that have gone both ways on that. There's, I'm not going to give you citations, but there's an RTC versus Bright case where you can challenge a witness, just as you would challenge a witness on cross-examination with other information in order to get to the truth. And so sounds like the judges in the Fifth Circuit have said, yeah, it's okay to do that. There's another Fifth Circuit case, Ibarra versus Baker, where almost the same thing happened as in RTC versus Bright. And the judges said, no, that's unethical, because you're influencing a witness to alter their testimony in a false or misleading way. So there's ethical components to how much you can talk to a witness about to try and shape their testimony and prepare them by using what other witnesses said or what other documents said. And all I can tell you is it's completely unclear to me as a judge where that bright line is. I think it's a very tough line.
I know that in other countries, especially in Europe, like Italy and France, witness preparation is actually prohibited because the line between preparing and what they perceive as coaching is a little too blurry.
Yeah, not just witness preparation is prohibited. Witness contact with the lawyer is illegal in some countries. So you can't even, you know, have any contact with a witness before they give their testimony in some countries.
What about helping them answer tough questions?
Yeah, that's where the real payoff comes in witness prep. After you've kind of talked to them about what's making them anxious, and after you've gone over these procedural comfort kind of things and given them some rules that they can follow, I think the role playing is where the real bang for the buck is, Marcy. It's practicing those tough questions and how you're going to answer them so that you're not doing it for the first time in front of a jury or in the deposition. That's where a lawyer can really help a witness. And we ethically, we've got a duty to prepare the witness in the United States, at least. We've got a duty to prepare the witness as best we can to be effective as lawyers. So practicing those tough questions. And by tough, I don't just mean like you've got a felony conviction. It's going to be tough for you to answer that question. I also mean you're not answering questions very well when they call for a specific yes or no. You're giving explanations. So those kinds of questions, procedurally, those kinds of questions are really hard for you, or stylistically, I guess. Those kinds of questions are hard for you. So both the case-specific hard questions and the stylistic questions that this witness has a hard time answering, both of those, if you rehearse them, they get better at them.
What about the use of video in witness preparation?
It's a great, great tool for us. I think people still, again, have some hangups about, well, if we videotape it, they may get a hold of the videotape and see all of our prep. So they may see me giving advice. They may see the witness giving the wrong answer. Again, it's not discoverable in the most general sense. I guess if you're doing videotape with a fact witness who's not your client, you should at least be concerned about whether it would be admissible or not. But otherwise, it's a great tool, and it's the same reason when you go to a NIDA program, we have a video review, because people need to see themselves, and they explaining to someone that they've got a face, they make a face when something happens, is not nearly as persuasive as showing them the video.
Right. The proof is right in front of you there with the video.
Right. And it's hard to contest it. The other thing is, it used to be a big process. We'd have to get a videographer in there, and we'd put a screen up behind you, and I'm paying this videographer lots of money to videotape you preparing for a deposition. Now it's, I pull out my iPhone and I lean it up against a stack of books and I push play. And then we both go look at my iPhone. So it's become a lot easier to do. And it's a really great tool for witnesses to get better at the visual part, the nonverbal part of their testimony.
So one of the things that, one of the goals of taking a deposition is that it's an opportunity for you as counsel to test your theory of the case. Is it ever helpful to let your witness know what you're testing or to explain the theme that you're playing around with?
I think that it is. I think it, especially the theory, maybe in my mind, the theory has more to do with both the legal rules that are being applied to the case and the facts, and we try and arrange those in a way that will help us win before the judge, will help us get, usually I think of it like, this is what I need to do to not get a directed verdict if I'm the plaintiff, or to have this defense be submitted to the jury if I'm the defendant. That's the theory. But the theme is sort of a gut punch. The theme is more of a, here's in your heart why you should want my client to win. And I think sharing that with your client can be very valuable. It can give them a home base or a safe harbor to come back to when they're having problems answering a question. So Marcy, for instance, if I were preparing you for a deposition and the case was all about you got hurt because somebody didn't clear their sidewalk and it was icy and it was a hotel that knew people were going to be on it. And I told you, Marcy, what this case is about for us is not taking responsibility for your own mistakes. Then later on in the deposition, when you start getting flummoxed on some answer, you can come back to, you know, I just wish they'd taken some responsibility for cleaning that sidewalk or for making sure it was safe. So I think a lot of people, it's really helpful for them to know the theme. I think I can't imagine very many reasons I wouldn't want to share it with my client or with the witness, other than if I have a witness who is really, really insecure and really, really not confident, I'm afraid that they're just going to lean on it and give every answer repeating our theme. I may kind of wait at least till the end of the prep, until we fix that problem before I share the theme with them.
So it sounds like for most witnesses, that really will help them kind of visualize how they fit in to the story of the case.
Exactly. Yeah. And knowing that can be that safe harbor for them, can be that place they come to when they're starting to feel unhinged a little.
So what are some of the common pitfalls to watch out for in witness preparation?
Well, a few. I think the biggest, and by the biggest, I mean by in the 80 or 90%, when you have a problem with the witness, it's because you didn't prepare enough. I'll tell you from my own failures when I was a lawyer, when I lost cases, I could almost always tell you, God, if the witnesses had just said what they were supposed to, I would have won. And so it's easy to blame them, but that underprepared witness is really our fault. It takes time for lawyers. Time is your most precious commodity. So it takes time, and we don't have a lot of time. But if you skip over the preparation or give short shrift to the preparation, then it's going to come out at the end. The witness is going to say things, not because they're a bad witness, because they're underprepared. That's the biggest flaw or pitfall I see with witness prep. The other side of it, though, is just as bad, much less common, but just as bad, the overprepared, the scripted witness who feels like they have to say an answer exactly as the witness, as the lawyer said it, or as they practiced saying it. That also comes across not such a bad thing in depositions. I mean, it's bad, but much worse if it happens at trial. If witnesses look like they're scripted in trial, their credibility goes down the toilet. So overprepared or scripted can be bad.
So you've got to figure out where the happy medium is.
Right, right. And you also have, you know, sometimes it's not the preparation. It's just, I talked about it at the beginning of a witness preparation session. You want to deal with their anxieties. If you skip that, in the deposition, you're going to have a scared witness or nervous witness. At trial, you're going to have a scared or nervous witness. You're going to have the witness saying, I don't know, or I can't remember a lot if they're nervous or scared. So dealing with that anxiety that a witness may have is really going to be important, because if you don't do it, even if they're well prepared, they're going to come across as jittery or insincere.
An awful lot of depositions, especially in the post-COVID era, are now being conducted via Zoom or some other remote platform. So could you talk a little bit about what the differences are in counsel's burden when a witness is testifying remotely versus face-to-face?
Sure. And that you're right. COVID really, really accelerated how quickly lawyers and courts use technology. And what we have found is there are a lot of good uses for things like Zoom and video conferencing in depositions and even at trial. And some of those things are going to stick around. I mean, COVID may be starting to hit our rearview mirror, but those tools are going to stick around because we've become comfortable with them. Even old judges like me have learned how to do testimony at trial by video conference and learned that it can be done and it's effective. And there's a lot of cost savings to it. So especially depositions, those are going to stick around. Those COVID just sped up what was already probably going to happen. It probably would have taken us 20 years instead of 3, but it was going to happen because it's so efficient.
Silver lining.
Yeah, right. There's one. I don't know if there's another one, but there's one of COVID. So you asked about what the counsel's burden, how is counsel's burden in preparing a witness different when you're using Zoom or some other platform? And I think it is. It's first of all, your prep changes, because preparing a witness to give live testimony is completely different than preparing them to give testimony over video conference. Just as having a live witness is way different than having a witness who's in a little, maybe 3x2 box on your computer screen. You can't see as much of them. You don't know what else they have in the room or who else they have in the room. You've got to prepare them differently. I would suggest if it's a Zoom deposition, even if your client is in your office to prepare with you, at some point you get onto Zoom to prepare them. Have them go into the next room and you both have computers and get on Zoom, because the way we interact with each other on Zoom is different. So use whatever platform you're going to use when you prepare. Also, recognize that people have anxieties about computer use. We probably, as lawyers and certainly as judges, have gotten a lot of practice in the last 3 years using video conferencing technology. Most people haven't. So some people still have anxiety about the whole idea of video conferencing. And you need to deal with that in the prep by getting them on it, getting them used to it, maybe even showing them how to work it. we take for granted that witnesses, you know, Marcy, if you were being called right now as a witness at trial, you and I are looking at each other on a computer screen. And I just assume, because I do it all day long, that you know you can't have your notes there in front of you. And you can't have another person in there coaching you with things you might forget. But normal people don't know that. I think people in good faith, when they get onto a Zoom platform to give trial testimony, they don't know they can't have their friend helping them or anything like that. They would never do that at trial. They would never bring a friend up and sit in the witness stand with them. But they don't know that it's different. It's no different really at trial. So you have to go over those rules and prep with them so they're not surprised when someone says, you look like you're reading something. You shouldn't be reading something. So go over those rules with them in advance. People make innocent mistakes, and you don't want your client caught in an innocent mistake. Dealing with exhibits. Exhibits are really difficult. That's still the thing we haven't figured out, I don't think, very well. Both at trial and at in depositions, when we use exhibits and we're on a platform where we're all, not all sitting next to each other and I can just hand you the exhibit, we're still trying to figure out how to make that go the most smooth that it can. And it's still kind of weird.
Yeah, I've heard that's very challenging, even 3 years hence.
Right. And I don't see a great solution suggested by anyone. I've seen lots of solutions, you know, mailing the exhibits to them in a sealed envelope and having them open it up on the camera during the deposition.
I hadn't heard that one.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, what exhibits you're going to use, you don't want the other side to really know in advance. So that's something I've seen people do, all kinds of screen sharing. And sometimes that's just hard for witnesses who aren't as technologically advanced, maybe as lawyers are in using screen sharing techniques. So I would say whatever you're going to do at trial, again, practice that on the platform with your witness. Or if it's going to be in a deposition and you know they're going to have to deal with documents, do it on the same platform that you're going to do in the deposition, use in the deposition.
So we've talked a little bit about how a witness who is unfamiliar with going into a deposition can have a lot of anxiety. But there are also other reasons why they could have anxiety, and that is that they need to be deposed about things that have been traumatic for them. They have experienced or seen something traumatic, or maybe they've been intimidated or threatened in some way. So I wonder if we could talk just a little bit about how to prepare a witness who has that difficulty.
Yeah, that's a great question, Marcy, and it's different. And you have to be conscious of the difference. When you have a witness who's been through a traumatic event and is being asked to give testimony about it, that's a hard thing. And if you go in and try and prepare them in the same way that you prepare a corporate witness to talk about the documents in a case, you're going to have a bad experience in your deposition or at your trial. I think the first thing to do is what you just said. You've got to identify, okay, this is somebody who might have some problems talking about an assault or something they were the victim of. And that's totally understandable. I don't think we change our entire preparation style. We're still going to deal with their anxieties first, give them some rules, and then role play the questions that might come up with that might be hard for them. That's still the format we're going to use. We're just going to spend a lot more time up front dealing with their anxieties. We're going to really listen there, and we're going to remind ourselves over and over again, shut up and listen. There's a value to those people who have been through trauma having the opportunity to tell you what they went through, to get it off their chest. And if you don't give them that opportunity, they're not going to have a very good witness prep session. So listen more, talk less, let them talk to you about what makes them anxious. And I think some people, and everybody reacts differently, I know, but some people who have been through traumatic events are very stoic about the experience. They still have the anxieties. They're just not going to volunteer to throw them on the table in front of you. You really still have to try and get those people to talk about their anxieties, because none of the rest of what you're doing is going to sink in if those anxieties are just under the surface. So with traumatic, I'll call them trauma witnesses, listen more, spend more time in that first, the procedural and the anxiety parts of the deposition before you move on to the role playing. You may spend, if you're to another kind, just a run of the mill witness, you may spend 50% of the time you've got to prepare them doing the role playing, because as I said, that's where the real bang for the buck comes. Maybe not with someone who's is talking about some traumatic event they've been through. Maybe you're only spending 25% of the time doing that. Or if you have the luxury, maybe your prep time is 4 hours instead of two. So spend the time to get that first part. Listen more. When they're giving their testimony, now I know we're just talking about witness prep, but in the deposition, when you have somebody who's like that, they need to know that you're there for them. So if it's a deposition, look for opportunities to make valid objections early so that they know they've got a protector there. They've got somebody who's there looking out for their best interests. And take breaks. They may not ask for them. They may try and, again, be stoic or tough. You are in charge of your witnesses' breaks, and you are in charge of when they need a break. That's not required to start with them.
Yeah, those are really good suggestions. I like what you said about getting a couple of objections out right away so that you're signaling to the witness, I am your protector. I'm here for you.
Yeah. And even my body posture in those kinds of depositions is going to be different. I'm going to be sitting closer, leaning forward more, letting them know I'm there. If it's a corporate CEO that I'm not worried about, I mean, I'm not sitting in the corner reading the paper, but I'm also not as present.
Should expert witnesses be prepped differently?
Mostly no. Experts want to be prepared differently. In fact, most experts want to not be prepared. They want to just go in and do their magic and then collect their check and go home. But no, that's not fair to experts. That's not true. That's a little bit true. But mostly, no, you don't want to prepare them differently. They have the same concerns the other witnesses do. Now, you may not, if a witness is expert witness is given 70 depositions, you may not have to spend a lot of time on what to wear or who's going to be there or those sorts of things, because
sure,
they've done that.
Right.
But the rehearsal with them, the role playing with them, you may get to it a little quicker, but it's going to be just as valuable. Expert witnesses are sometimes really bad, even if they've given deposition testimony 100 times. They use jargon. They answer more than the question that they've been asked. And the role playing is a great place to make them better. And really, honestly, most of them have never had that experience, because most of the time they get their way and they just say, you know, when you call them to set up a prep time, they, I don't really need it. Okay, fine. So there's nobody's really gone through this with them and coached them into not using jargon, coached them into shorter answers.
It sounds like they need maybe a little more discipline.
Yes.
Be less freewheeling, to have, you know, parameters for what is okay to say or how to present it.
Totally right. That's exactly right. They don't get told that very often, because I think sometimes we as lawyers, and certainly they as experts, feel like, well, on this subject, they're steering the ship and they're the ones in charge, and I'm going to let them say it the way they want. And I get that, but I'll tell you, a well-prepared expert is noticeable in deposition and at trial. Witnesses who are experts and are giving opinions, who don't talk over the jury, who have been prepared to not use jargon and to, you know, maybe even to get down and draw on a board. Those are witnesses who are much more effective as experts than those who are just going to come in and shine with their brilliance.
These have been really great tips. So I think that anyone who doesn't have really well-prepared witnesses for depositions, they have no excuse after this episode. Yeah. Thank you very much for sharing everything that you know about this.
Well, I'll tell you, it's much easier for me to talk to you about it than it was for me to do it in real life. Because when I can think of 90% of the witnesses I ever presented for deposition or trial that I didn't follow all of this advice, and it came back and bit me in the rear end.
But now you're paying it forward by teaching everybody else how to do it. So my favorite part of the interviews always these kind of snoopy sign-off questions. So I want to ask, what are you reading for pleasure lately?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because it gives me an opportunity to talk about what gives me pleasure. What I've been reading lately is Goodnight Moon, because I've got a brand new granddaughter. And so sitting with her and reading Goodnight Moon is fun. Thank
Congratulations.
You. I've been reading, there's an author called C.J. Box, and he writes sort of murder mystery Western books. It's a series of, there's 23 books with this guy, Joe Pickett, who's the hero of all of them. Characters stay the same in all of them. No heavy philosophic intellectual reading, but really good for me after spending a whole day of reading stuff that is heavy intellectual stuff to sit down with a brainless book and be entertained.
Yeah, of course.
So I'm on the 20th of 20, those 23 books now.
Oh, I was just going to ask you where you were in the series. Okay.
I bragged before you could ask.
And what about TV shows? Is there anything that you've been watching that you're obsessed with?
So we're recording this on April 13th. I don't know when it's going to come out, but I suspect and I hope that it comes out when Ted Lasso's new season is all the way done. Right now I'm watching that, and I love the first season so much. They made me feel happy, and I haven't gotten it yet. I'm only 3 or 4 shows into it, and I just haven't gotten that happiness that I got from the other one. So I'm hoping that's what I'm watching, and that's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, it feels a little different to me too.
Yeah. It just gave me such joy now.
Well, and especially at a time when we really needed it, because that started, was it 2021 maybe?
Yeah, 2020 or 2021. Yeah. But it was, you're right, it was right when we were all in need of a good, not just a chuckle, but a heartwarming kind of story.
Indeed. So, if this is what you get from Judge Witten for free, just imagine what you would learn if you spent 8 hours a day, 4 days in a row, with him at our Trial Skills program in San Diego. Staying on the waterfront while developing your advocacy skills is not such a bad gig, so if you're interested, the link is in the show notes. But in any event, thank you so much for tuning in and for being a listener, just like Judge Witten. Until we meet again next month, I wish you the very best of luck in your trials, your depositions, your motions, and other proceedings. Happy lawyering!
May the Record Reflect is a NIDA Studio 71 production. NIDA, we are advocacy enhanced, mentorship reimagined. Welcome to the community.